The fact is that this technology, which became more visible with social media, with social networks, with big tech, it's actually very old. And I learned this technology mostly through through healthcare systems. So I learned the system through more through hospital systems. So these are systems that they are made to aggregate data from different sources with a model. And this model is semantic in the sense that it give meaning to these things, but meaning as in person or organization or event. So also like more of a high mid-level definition of these things. And then by doing this, it creates a network.
Welcome.
Welcome.
First, maybe let's do a short round of introductions. Who are you? What's Archival Consciousness? Why are you here at the Remix Festival? And then let's start a conversation from that. And maybe after that, I'm also going to show you a bit of the setup and what we can do with it.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so my name is Remco van Bladel. Co-founder of Archival Consciousness, and my background is a graphic designer, so mainly making books, digital platforms, publishing platforms, and now since a couple of years working under the moniker of Archival Consciousness together with Mariana Lenari. Maybe you can introduce yourself actually.
Hi, my name is Mariana Lanari. I'm Brazilian, living in the Netherlands now for 10 years. And I have my background experience with editing books and also making exhibitions. And it's from this perspective that we approach the archive also as a, I think sometimes also the archive as a museum. Or, as a book.
But now you're presenting this project, Bibliograph, or Archival Consciousness. So what is actually the relationship between Bibliograph and Archival Consciousness? This might be my first question. And also the relationship to books, right? Because you introduce yourself like linked to books, but my idea I have of you, it's just connected to books, but not as specifically as book designers.
Yeah, so...
You want to give an introduction of...
Oh, yes. Sorry, I always jumped in into the interview. Okay, so welcome to the pop-up streaming setup. And here we want to experiment with a bunch of different cameras, screens, inputs to basically have a conversation with you that enables live editing and streaming. So today, you can see we have three different inputs. The camera over there, which basically shows us in front of this blue screen. Then we have the computer, the desktop, and the third input is the combination of both. That's actually what the audience is seeing that's over there in program. And they're actually seeing two shots of us because there's a webcam on top of the computer that's making this shot within the shot. And here, if you see this little device over here, this is a Stream Deck, and we can switch in between the different inputs. But to keep it simple, we can just click cut, and then we go only to the full screen, basically the desktop. And if we press cut again, we have ourselves. Yes. There's more possibilities, but also complicated for us. Exactly. Yeah. And we're figuring out this as we go. Here, actually, as any good old computer, we can go onto a good old browser and play this.
Exactly.
If it loads.
If we have internet.
If we have internet.
OK. can share also my computer.
Been working till now, hopefully.
I mean the internet with my phone.
Let's refresh.
I think in this media palace that we are in, we should be able to have a proper Wi-Fi connection. Yes.
No.
No? Oh, or maybe not.
But that's fine. Maybe we can continue the conversation.
Yeah. So we were talking about your relationship to books and archival consciousness. What are you doing exactly with books?
Yeah, so this work started with the idea of reading a library. Mm-hmm. And I think that the distinction between a library and an archive is that in the library, things are already published. Mm-hmm. And in an archive, it's actually things that are not published. So the archive have more, I say, secrets also, or things that are not meant to be public. Because I'm really interested more in the system, like how things get connected and what is this process of being able to navigate things in a network. That's why at the beginning I just looked really into the library. And also because I come from, let's say, bookmaking, and also I participated in making also several databases, and so this relationship between the book and the database, I find it also super interesting. Yeah, so that's why we started with the books. And also like a library, everyone can have a picture of what that is. Let's say a collection of books, everyone can imagine that. So that we imagine networks within that is also, a good case for this.
And of course, my role as a book designer that comes already. But we met the both of us even through making a book, which was already in 2013. I was working on a book called No Solar, by Jonas Staal, and Mariana was the editor. So and then after a couple of years of a hiatus between, we met again and actually found. More than work relationship built between the two of us, and it kind of started growing from there. But the love of books became the love between us, basically. Yeah.
Very very cute story. Very.
Yeah, it's really nice that it always kind of boils down, and even now what we're doing in the current constellation, because you were asking about archival consciousness and bibliograph, so. Mm-hmm. What we see that is that it's also more of a configuration that archival consciousness is our name and the moniker that we run our operation with, and bibliograph is kind of a platform that we're slowly on building, and in first case mostly with the archive of the Apple, and that will kind of slowly distribute and will incorporate other archives, so it becomes kind of an archive of archives in that sense.
So you're somehow doing this platform to archive different archives. How does your platform exactly do it? How do you get all of the information from these archives? Because I know that you have like very interesting processes around it about how to collect and organize information. So could you tell us a little bit more about it?
Yeah, so after I did this project at the Stedelijk Museum that was really like a performance, I understood that the only way to actually do this was through the database. And I don't think like a museum like the Stedelijk or any museum or institute would like you to interfere in their database, because there's a lot going on in there. And that's why we thought, okay, we build a database on top of these databases. So indeed, we have access to existing databases, and these databases are really a treasure, because many times they exist for decades, but the people who input the content, who actually type the data in the fields, they never see behind what happened after years. So when you first import this data and look at it, you immediately can see a lot of conclusions like this. Let's say in the Casa do Povo, you saw most of the books come from three cities. Warsaw, New York, and Buenos Aires, and not even them knew this, you know, but it was there in the database. So that's one thing. And another thing is that I made a lot of databases in the past, the early 2000s databases that were used for exhibitions. And the last one was in 2011 in the Biennial of São Paulo. So it's a database that is really important, like when you have like more than 3,000 works in an exhibition of like hundreds of artists and coming from countries and stuff, so that you can have like a consistent information about this. And so I also had this this experiences building the databases, but these databases, they don't exist anymore. So although the database is used to archive, there's not that thing about archiving a database. And then in Brazil, in the last, not the last, but the before election that we managed to elect a really fascist president, a really important archive, which is an archive of the resistance during dictatorship, I heard that the director of that archive used the budget to create mirrors of this archive and take it out of the country as a way to preserve the archive. And that I also had to think about this, so the importance of actually archiving archives. So the institutes we work with, they are also vulnerable in a way. They're not like state funded, or they're not part of heritage schemes, and so they are always in the verge of perhaps closing. So we thought, oh, this is actually a really good thing to do. So that's our idea. So we create a database, and our database, it has a, let's say, a higher level of abstraction. So we are more generic than the databases we work with. So in a way that each database is unique also inside our system, because we map this database to a more simple system. So to people, events, objects, organizations, and spaces and time. So, it becomes really a way to somehow mirror this archive, and by mirroring, also participating in preserving and displaying and, showcasing, and also being able to visualize the network behind it.
Oh, yeah. I was kind of curious because obviously, like, I think both of your separate practices and communal practice have a lot to do. So, like, maybe yours is more data-driven, organization-driven. However, like, the role of a graphic designer is also very much about conveying and organizing information. So I noticed in your work, in your website, and in your previous, like, just projects, that the role of labels and categories is actually like a super graphic element, as well as conceptual element, as well as obviously like very important in navigating any type of archive or database or like graphic design like project. So I like how it all comes together in your case. And I was wondering like how, like what is the role of these separate labels? Can you search based on only like one of the labels? There's like also color codes that I wasn't certain like how they overlap, and I didn't manage to find a way on your website to search only based on the labels. So I was wondering if you could a little bit like describe more the process of labeling and categorization, and
I think it's better to start conceptually on your side, I think, because it taps into the data model basically. And then there's of course my work actually kind of follows basically usually behind the logic of Mari, because Mari is kind of the initiator of this project and the research that where it comes out of. And then it's constantly finding this common language to somehow convey this to a larger audience, and we're always on the forefront, and then having to hop around behind, let's say, to kind of like what we can do in terms of development and with who we're working, because just to be clear of us is that we are not the ones that are actually programming this platform. So it's also good to know for people that are listening. Yeah, but maybe you can explain a little bit about the model and the labels.
Yeah, so the labels and the colors is our attempt to bring to the foreground, to the front end, to the interface, what is usually in the background. So it's really the same data model that we are using in the back that we are bringing to the front. And the colors, you can also, if you start looking at, they're really consistent. So we use the colors all across, not only Bibliograph, but now the publication too, is always the same colors. It's like green and dark for people, dark green for collectives, and so everything that has to do with people, so organizations we also understand as, let's say, a group of people, is green, and then object is purple, and light yellow is everything related to content. And so we just, the front end is actually very minimal. So you mostly see archive material, and then you see these colors and these tags. Now, if you look at the model, like we are seeing the model now, the book in the center, the book is like an object. And yeah, in this one. So the book is an object, and every arrow that's coming out of the book is related to, let's say, metadata of this book. But the same way that the book is an object, it could be an audio tape or a videotape is also an object. And a file is also an object, because then we are also attributing the materiality. So a file is an object. And a file has a name, and this name is a content. So what we do in this model is that we separate the managing of the object from managing the content. So when you tag a word in a book, through the model we know that this word is part of a sentence, that is part of a paragraph, that is part of a specific page, that is part of a book, and then how it's wired to the entire rest of the model.
You worked, sorry, you want to say something?
No, it's a, like before I kind of like got this also, like to try to communicate it to make this manageable as an interface is really interesting from a design perspective, as the complexity of, and also to, because we're trying to do this for multiple archives, so you're basically thinking about a visual language that is almost more, that goes more towards a kind of a graphic user interface or what is it, an operating system, than a website in itself. So it's a piece of little kind of a little web application that allows for you to navigate through these links. And so far what we have and what we see is that what we have now as links is only that we're navigating through the metadata. And so what we're going to basically do is that in this later stage in the upcoming year is that a lot of the content of these pages will be OCR, so optical character recognition. And then there will be a public labeling tool that allows for, on the front end, that the visitors can actually say, oh, you see a name of a person appearing. Ah, that is a person. Mm-hmm. And then once that person is triggered once in the system, it will allocate and find every instance of that name throughout all the scans that have been made and made directly, makes relationships between them. So this network that is now already quite a sophisticated but kind of intriguing network, it will only explode when you can start to really label the content within these images.
Basically labeling the content online, like on the platform, because you did that last year at the Apple, so basically using the exhibition as a format to label. Could you tell us more about that too, and what does it imply to basically make external all of these linking metadata processes, or do you have any thoughts about like what does it mean to visibilize them?
Yeah, labeling is a work that is done behind all sorts of AI systems or also machine learning systems. So when you have a content, like when you have a page with text, for the computer, this is just a file that, has a format, so to say. That's the only thing the computer actually knows, and the name of the file. So when you label something, then you also are translating that, only that word, into a structure that the machine can sort of process. and I don't want to say understand, but can process. Yeah. So if you label, so it's actually very basic. We call it annotations. It's often called annotation, but it's more labeling. People think, well, annotation would be something personal, but no. It's just like you highlight something and you say it's a person, or it's an organization, or it's an object. That's the only thing. And when you do this, this goes to the database, so then we know that that book has that person. So it creates another link between a page inside the book and that person that might be also already part of the database. In the case of the Apple, many artists that are authors were also part of events. And if you see this database now that you're seeing in the background, it's highly connected. Like most books that you click has a bunch of artists involved, and if you click in every artist, there's usually a bunch of books in which these artists appear. So you can see that it's highly connected also.
Sorry, those connections then were made by all of the people visiting the exhibition at that moment?
Actually, no? So far, the connections that you're seeing is only metadata. So okay. These connections that you see, I think it's also really, really great to mention that they were mostly made by the archivists. Mm-hmm. So Nell, who made this entire plan of the archive, and Jacqueline van Elsberg, who's there in the archive for many years, and day in, day out, crafting this. And also, her work is so good that she not only includes the authors, but also artists mm-hmm. that are referred there and that are also in the program of the Institute. So this is all manual labor by the team of the archive. Also, there are other people working there, Jan and many people that are collaborating, that we can see all this metadata live. Mm-hmm. So the annotation system that we made in the exhibition was mm-hmm. a simulation, okay. also to try to show how it is done, because mm-hmm. we think that there are many people that don't know how mm-hmm. the systems are done, and this also is an opportunity for misleading people mm-hmm. into trusting too much. Basically, they're trusting too much or dreaming too much within this existing right now AI tools. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's all of this hidden labor around AI tagging. I actually worked for a big public organization tagging data at some point.
Really? Which one?
I mean, the European Parliament. I was.
Wow, my goodness.
I was an intern tagging data there.
So I know
that was something, another question I wanted to do. So basically all of these big platforms nowadays basically work on all of its users more or less performing this job of yes. tagging, plus also all of the like hidden unpaid labor
yes.
That's around tagging. And I feel like your project has this intention of making that tagging something explicit and not something necessarily exploitative. That was like, do you think this is like possible, or there are ways to create forms of tagging or forms of database creation that are not necessarily exploitative or,
I truly believe that, actually, and I'm trying to work for that. If we will manage or not, let's see. But the thing is that the same system of tagging, to me, it can really be used as a way of reading. Mm-hmm. Because the thing about tagging, and you probably experienced this, is that when you tag, also the people who tag, they have no clue about the whole, mm-hmm. you know, like context that they're tagging for. So this is also something that we are completely opening. And they also have no clue about the model. And the model, I really try to show the model and work with the model, but of course not many people are interested in understanding the model, but at least we try to make it explicit. Because these are then three things. One thing is annotating. You know what the context, you know the model, and when you annotate in our case, immediately you're going to see what things are related. Mm-hmm. So, and then you can use annotation as a way of reading in the database. So if you are doing a research, and then you are researching an artist, and then because of this, you're gonna have a page in front of you, and you're gonna tag that artist. And then the system is gonna highlight every other publication that artist mm-hmm. appear. And this is going to become part of the tagging. But for you, it was a way of you finding what you wanted. So we are also doing something that every system does, which is problematic in most cases, which is this double intention behind things. So our double intention is that you can use the system to read, but when you read, you tag the system and create a more interconnected system for us. And the way we find that this is not exploitative is because it's declared, and because we think that the technology, the fact is that this technology, which became more visible with social media, with social networks, with big tech, it's actually very old. And I learned this technology mostly through healthcare systems. So I learned the system through hospital systems. So these are systems that they are made to aggregate data from different sources with a model. And this model is semantic in the sense that it gives meaning to these things, but meaning as in person or organization or event. So also like more of a high mid-level definition of these things. And then by doing this, it creates a network. So the fact that this is used in an exploitative way is mostly the way we came to know this. But beforehand, let's say for an airport to work or a hospital to work, because the hospital is taking data from health insurance with diagnosis, with like the prescription that goes to the pharmacy, and this needs to be on 24 hours a day, and you cannot have any flaw. So the technology is the same technology they use in more exploitative systems in
fraud detection.
Yeah, or also fraud detection in banks, or even functioning of banks also, you know, so there are many other types of systems relying also on graph databases and networks and knowledge graphs. Nowadays it's called ontologies, are more used also in the context of knowledge graphs.
Actually, I pop in just to take the words of the online audience, because we have a question from online. And I think it could be also a nice conclusion. Unfortunately, we only have half an hour of slots. And also, yeah, exactly. I have this feeling that like, now I also found a comfortable position, so I think we could really go for hours. And yes, and we do the pop-up there. So we have a question from the online, and I'm going to read it. What are the next steps for Bibliograph, if there are any? And how to expand the features, use, and infrastructure? It's a very specific question.
Yeah. What was the last part of the question?
Features, sorry for my accent, use, and infrastructure.
Well, I think that the next phase of what we're currently busy building is it's called Publish, Bibliograph Publish, and it's actually a way, what we see is it's a way to kind of create hybrid books, and based on the same kind of feature, so these books that are actually kind of produced in a user interface that would be able to generate a PDF version of the book that can be watched online or printed as a hard copy. But it also generates a web view, a kind of an HTML version directly from the entire book. And it archives it back into the system. So it's kind of like we see it more as kind of archiving as publishing. So it's kind of publishing as archiving, I have to say, actually. And for us, it's also an interesting way because just as much as that we created the tables at the Apple to have a station to digitize materials, to have physical objects turning into the physical objects turning into digital objects. The publication tool also kind of is kind of like a way out of the digital for us. So we're doing this project, but we have no clue how long we're going to be able to pay for all of this. And that's always kind of a risk also. So we also feel that it's our obligation to kind of make sure that data sets can be exported, that they can be kind of taken out, but also that you can just turn an entire data set back into a published book. So far, I think the evidence is clear that most of the time that if we make a hard copy book, they will outlive us. And we probably are pretty sure that most of our servers will not. So far there's no better way to just making a physical book, and that's also something that is really kind of became apparent in my own practice, where a lot of times they would ask me to make a publishing platform or a website and then populate it for a couple of years, and then there would be no more budget to maintain the site, and then the question would come up, can you turn the website into a book? So why not make kind of an application that does this directly, you know, both making a book, making a web view, making an archive out of it. So that's kind of our intention, and that's coming, it's going to be released at the Dutch Design Week in 2 weeks in Eindhoven.
Bytes are less sustainable than paper in some way.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much. Do you want to?
Yeah, I wanted one last question.
Do you have time? Then you have to leave.
Okay. Basically, it does super connect with the online question as well. But I was wondering, actually I wrote it down, like, do you think the political charge of books as objects gets lost in the process of digitalization? Like, however necessary this process might be. Like, do you think that the political emancipatory potentially, informational empowering charge of like printed matter, also historically, but also nowadays, does it get lost in the digital format?
I think at least just my first take would be on it that with every translation there's loss. So, but it also kind of there's two different distinct things. I think that there. The political impact of a book as an object that kind of like outlasts. That's why I think that it is pretty important to kind of keep on also explaining the importance of, let's say, that physical object actually will probably has more chance of outliving us than the digital realm. But in this hybridity that can even be kind of a, we hope that we can create something that actually has an added value to that also in the digital realm.
I think that also somehow, I don't know exactly, of course, about this, but there are many political uses also of the digital and the network in a way. I find that we have to also claim this. And especially, I think, the aspect of distribution and the aspect, and that's why also like in the published now, and the more we work with this also, the more we learn in a more granular way, let's say, the difference also between an URL and a PDF. You know, so for many people that you can create a lightweight PDF, this can travel, and also the digital has this also fantastic thing of multiplication as well, that you can like easily sort of quickly distribute, and this is also a political gesture. Like, I would like also to mention the work of like Sci-Hub. It's the most incredible project in the internet, I think, by far, and it's a really long-term project, and that indeed gives access to millions of people that otherwise couldn't consume scientific papers at all. And myself, from a very privileged position of being even inside the university, having access to most journals that I want, I prefer 10 times using Sci-Hub because it's much easier. You know, like in the university, sometimes I have to go to so many places to find out where is this, where is that, and oh, your institution this and surf that. In 1 second, I get the same thing from Sci-Hub. And I love to use it, you know, and this, I think, is really the power of the internet, really. And yeah.
Okay, thank you so much. That was really interesting.
I love that we ended with Sci-Hub. I love that we ended with like just. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure having you here. Yeah. And good luck with your trip. Safe travels right now.